Hi, I'm John Gossman. I'm an architect in the Azure Core team, focused on DevOps and open source experiences with Azure. And today I have with me, you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Armon Dodgar. I'm one of the co-founders and CTO of HashiCorp, and very lucky to get to work with John pretty regularly.
Well, welcome, and welcome to Microsoft.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's actually very exciting to be here. It's a cool studio.
Tell me a little bit about HashiCorp, about the origin of the company in particular, name.
Sure, yeah. So HashiCorp, so like I said, I'm one of the co-founders. The other founder, his last name is, his full name is Mitchell Hashimoto. So it's a bit of a named after him. But the origin of the company really is about 4 years ago. Me and Mitchell started it out of my living room. And it really started with the kind of frustration of the state of how complex it was to deliver a modern application, right? So me and Mitchell came from a background of working at, you know, a large-scale mobile ad company, and the challenges we faced there was trying to really airlift a bunch of operational tools written in the 80s and 90s and figuring out how we make it work in the cloud. And it was frustrating and painful, and so we said, screw it, let's like do it all over again. And so that was sort of the origin of it. It started with the two of us. We had sort of this vision for building kind of a totally new tool chain. That's kind of, you know, what I have behind us here is the seven open source tools that we build and maintain as a company. And really thinking about the delivery problem end to end and kind of changing the way it's done, hopefully for the better. And then since then, it's been, you know, we've grown from, you know, two people to a little more than that.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about DevOps and your perspective on what DevOps is, since you're a DevOps company, right?
Yeah, totally. So DevOps, I think it's one of these totally overloaded words where there's, you know, ask five people, you're going to get seven different definitions of it. The way we like to think about DevOps is it's really about the broader workflow of how we're delivering an app, right? So the way I like to describe it is any organization, you have people, you have the process that sort of governs how those people interact, and then you have the tools that finally support it. And I think it's really easy for us to get caught up in sort of the tools and like what's the shiniest tool, but really it's about that process. It's how do we work together as developers, as operators, as security people, as a release engineering team to together deliver a broader app. So our sort of definition of DevOps is how do we look at all the people involved? How do we look at the process of going from development all the way through to production and streamlining that? Right? And so when we say streamlining it, sort of using the kind of stack you have behind you, is how do we kind of separate out what we consider three discrete problems? One is the infrastructure provisioning problem. So how do I acquire my servers, configure them, set them up? This is sort of typically the realm of my operator. This is kind of discrete from the security step. So how do I secure the infrastructure? How do I get distribute database credentials? How do I distribute my, you know, Azure API tokens? And then lastly, how do I decouple my developers and allow them to deploy their apps, scale up and down, you know, roll back if there's a bug, and do that without having to bother the security people or the ops people, really empowering each of these teams to run in parallel. So for us, that's how we like to think about DevOps. It's a process change that says, let's focus on the agility of the total org and empower the individuals to really do what they need to do without, you know, sending a ticket and then waiting 3 weeks, basically.
So is it fair to say that it's more like a culture than a technology?
Totally. I think that is totally fair. Yeah. It's really about how do we enable individuals.
What do you say as far as customers? What sort of customers really benefit from DevOps? What sort of customers are really coming and excited about DevOps as opposed to others?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think in general, it sort of benefits everyone, right? If we think about the process of delivering an application, it affects anyone who's writing an app, right? Whether, you know, it's a two-person startup working out of their living room, right? If one person has to say, okay, I'm going to file a ticket against you and I'm going to wait until you provision my server and in the meantime, I'm just going to go surf Twitter, right? At that point, if you could empower both of those people to run in parallel, right, you're twice as productive. All the way up to then like a Fortune 500 where the problems get exacerbated by having multiple teams, multiple silos, and, you know, the traditional waterfall starts having many different steps to it. So, you know, the benefit starts whether you're a very small team and, you know, it only kind of amplifies the bigger your team gets.
Okay, this is a funny question, but is there anybody you say should like not adopt DevOps, or is this like a universal
yes.
thing?
No, totally. I think as with all things, context is king, right? So the way I think about, so one way that we like to describe it is no matter what application you're developing, there's sort of seven fundamental steps, right? So it doesn't matter if I'm writing a C# application on Windows or a Go application on Linux, I have to write the code, right? I have to test it, hopefully, right? I guess I could skip that. There's a packaging step,
not
right?
Recommended.
Not
I guess
recommended.
You could.
You could skip it. Let's not do that, though.
Good day to die.
Right, exactly. maybe it's a very cavalier org, who knows. But once I've tested, there's a packaging step, right? So whether I'm creating a Docker container, whether I'm building a virtual machine, whether I'm just compiling my binary, I'm sort of packaging the source code to get ready to go to prod. There is a provision step. So how do I acquire the machine? How do I get the VMs for it or whatever I need? Deploying my app onto that. So once I have the machine, I have to get the app onto it. Then monitoring, making sure it's alive, and then lastly, securing. So if we take these seven steps as sort of, hopefully all of them are necessary, right? I guess maybe testing. But if we take these seven as sort of necessary and sufficient, in some sense you can do any those seven in any order, right? So you can pick any process by which you're going to get all seven of those things done, but you can't skip any of them, right? Like you can't deliver an app by skipping writing the code, or you can't get into production if you decide to skip the deploy step. So all of them are really necessary. It's that broader process by which you decide to do all of them that really governs the flow. So DevOps is really about saying, okay, we have to do all seven of these things. How do we do all seven in parallel, right? How do I have my operator provision infrastructure while my developer writes code, while my security team is securing it, and I want them to do things in parallel without talking to each other? And so what we're really optimizing for there is agility, right? We're running everyone in parallel, letting things go as fast as possible. What we're not optimizing for is risk. And so if we think about sort of the opposite side of this model, the traditional waterfall of first you do development, then it goes into QA, then it goes into security, then it goes into operations, it's a risk management technique, right? Is it saying the cost of a bug getting out there is so high that I'm willing to slow down my process to avoid that going out. So if you're building the payment processor for Visa, that's probably a good approach, right? Like a bug might cost you a few billion dollars.
Or the avionics for a Boeing aircraft.
Exactly. If you're doing the avionics for a Boeing aircraft, agility is not your top concern. You're not going to hot patch the 787 while it's flying.
Or the Tesla.
Right? Yeah. So it's like, if it takes you a good decade, that's fine, because it takes 30 years to like design a new plane. Versus if we're doing a web app and we're Facebook, we're Twitter, we're Pinterest, the cost of an error is so much lower that you care more about agility, because it's not like, a plane's going to fall out of the sky.
Okay, cool. So what HashiCorp products worked with Azure? I mean, we've been working with you. My first experience was probably about 3.5 years ago working with Mitchell to get Vagrant support for Windows and Azure. But tell us about what your products work with Azure.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think HashiCorp and Microsoft have a pretty long history. In some sense, one of the most important things to HashiCorp is it's a focus on workflow and remaining sort of technology agnostic. So what we mean by that is it's like when I describe these steps of it's about writing code, it's about provisioning, it's about deploying, it's about doing that whether it's C# Windows, Go on Linux, so on and so forth. And part of that is, pick any cloud. So for us, our whole tool chain has really been built around this concept that we want to run wherever our users are, right? So one way to think about it is, across the tool chain of the seven tools, each of them has sort of a different touch point. And the two that are really touch the cloud is the provisioning step. So as we're kind of acquiring hardware, we can think about Azure as our infinite resource pool. It's really about how do we build and set up our VM images with something like Packer? So how do I design my VM? And then how do I acquire VMs, set up my network, provision and configure everything, and manage the lifecycle? So Packer and Terraform are our two primary tools that touch Azure. For folks that are interested in it, there's much more extensive documentation if they check out Packer's documentation on how to leverage the resource manager. Terraform, similarly, if they go to Terraform's website and go to the Microsoft Azure provider, they can see the tons and tons of resources that Azure supports that are available through this. So,
by the way, I got to say, you guys have some of the most beautiful documentation ever, and it's been right from the beginning with Vagrant when it was, I believe, just a couple of people.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I mean, the way we look at it is it's like if folks are spending, a lot of time on the site trying to figure out how do I use the tool, how do I configure this, like how do we make it easier for them, right? And like one way to make it easier is to make it pretty to look at, right?
And it's informative too. I mean, I just enjoy reading this stuff. There's really good material up there.
Oh, I appreciate that. So we have I put together just a tiny demo of what it would look like to actually use Packer and Terraform with Azure. So all I'm going to start it, I'll just sort of explain what's happening here. We're kind of just doing a two-phase thing. First, we're using Packer and building a VM. So we're booting a base machine and then pre-installing the software we want to run on it. And so we're talking to Azure, spinning up a VM, copying the files over, configuring the operating system, and then taking a snapshot of it and saving what that snapshot's value is here. So here we can see we just brought up the machine. It's now provisioning it and setting it up. And now it's powering it off. So what we did was we just took a snapshot of the VM, and now we're going to shut it off. And then what we're going to switch to is Terraform is going to use this image that we just created to provision a few machines for us. So we're going to set up the Azure network. We're going to set up all of our, you know, security rules and firewall rules. And we're going to boot a few VMs and put a load balancer in front of that. So we just finished our image build. Terraform is now kicking off. And hopefully, just in a few seconds, we should see all of that pop up as well. And then after this, I can take a quick poke, and we can see like what this actually looked like in the code.
Okay.
Oh, there we go. We're off to the races. Cool. So yeah, I guess the first thing that's coming up is setting up our resource group, our storage accounts, virtual network, subnets. And so this is sort of Terraform's typical output. We can see as it's going, it's sort of creating the resources in parallel as much as possible. So once the resource finishes creating, it sort of spits out. So here we can see it's working on creating, for example, our network interface for the machine with our various configurations.
Now, one of the things I think is interesting about Terraform is that it has this interesting place where it doesn't abstract the underlying resources completely.
Totally.
It's a language, but yet you can use it on other clouds. You can use it on local infrastructure.
Right.
On our Azure with the same language, but not like some generic lowest common denominator definition of a VM or something.
Right, right. And I think that's one of the things we've seen is a lot of attempts to sort of abstract all of the clouds away. And I think this does a great disservice to them, right? Because each of the clouds has interesting APIs and services that you can consume, but once you treat everything as the lowest common denominator, you have to strip all of that away. So the goal, we can see the build finished here. So I'll flip over and I can show actually what you're mentioning here, which is that language. Here's what a Terraform configuration actually looks like. So here we're defining our resource group, our virtual network. So it's this very high-level language. We call it the HashiCorp config language, I'm sure you know, the HCL. And what we're doing is directly exposing the type of resource we're actually using. So here it's very explicitly an Azure Resource Manager virtual network. We're not trying to abstract it into like cloud network or something. So you can actually exploit all of the like particular features and interesting properties of each of these resources instead of, as you said, just getting that lowest common denominator.
Cool.
But yeah.
So there's something else you want to show on this one?
So on this one, yeah, just a quick run through. This is just a quick example of sort of what Terraform looks like for provisioning our Azure resource. So here we can see the various different resources being used. I think one of the interesting things is how we can create sort of linkages between these things. So for example, you know, we're defining our Azure virtual machine here, but we're able to pull in, you know, the resource group name from another resource that we've defined in here. We're able to pull in the network interface from a resource that we've defined above. So it lets us, in a very declarative way, kind of declare what the total graph should be in terms of our whole data center layout. And then with a single Terraform apply, we saw it bring up the network, the storage, the VMs, the load balancers, you know, just while we were talking. So I'll maybe spare people for folks that want to dive into some more of the documentation. It's all available online. The tools are all open source. So both Packer and Terraform, I recommend folks just check it out.
Okay, so another topic that really comes up, you know, even more recently, DevOps a little older, is containers. So what are you guys doing with containers?
Yeah, that's a great question. So going back to sort of what I said a little bit ago, which was really for us, our focus is on the workflow of the developers, the workflow of the operators, workflow of the security teams. So the technology choice people use is really up to their organization, right? And so the way we think about containers is really they're an awesome packaging mechanism and an awesome way to consistently deliver our apps no matter, you know, what their requirements are, what language they're in, what runtime requirements they have. And so for us, we've tried to make the broadest possible integration across our entire tool chain. So effectively, every single one of our open source tools has a native integration with both Docker, as well as many of them support Rocket as well. And some even support LXC. So it's sort of the pick your favorite flavor of containers. There's support pretty much across the board for all of them.
Very cool. I think Brian Cantrell says this thing like, containers are the new binary.
Right.
That's the thing that's going to be working throughout this DevOps plan. And it sounds like you've got it kind of throughout your pipeline, your parallel pipeline.
Right. Yeah, I think that's one of the, I think that is really an interesting observation, was one of the biggest challenges as we think about these different groups and as we're going from our development team to our operations team to our security team is, what's that unit that they're sort of passing along? What's that thing we're threading through our organization? And before it was like, okay, well, if it's a Java app, maybe we have the jar, and you know, maybe it's a DLL if it's C#, and like God knows what we're doing if it's Ruby, maybe we tar some stuff up. And so I think Docker ended up solving this all at once for every language, for every framework, with one sort of a solution, which is like, doesn't matter, package it up, you have this consistent thing, and now you just ship that, and don't worry about what's inside of it. So I think that's been a really huge sort of improvement in making it possible to streamline that flow through the organization.
Okay. So we've seen the documentation, that's a great place to start, but if somebody wants to get started using HashiCorp tools, what's the easiest way to get going?
Yeah, that's a great question. So each of our tools, what we try and do is have like a little getting started thing to help people ease into it. So, you know, I'll just step over to Terraform as an example. So I recommend that people just, if they go to the site and they click on the intro, then all of our projects have this getting started section. So if you go into there, it'll walk us through installing Terraform, building our first infrastructure, changing it, managing multiple resources and dependencies. And so each one of these ends up being a pretty small step, and it'll sort of build up into explaining it. So we'll start very simple with saying, okay, we'll start with a single instance, and we'll sort of explain what the terminology is and build up from there. So with each of our products, there's a nice sort of getting started flow to sort of test the waters, if you will. That said, there's a lot of tools. So I think it sort of depends on what problem people are facing. If people are saying, hey, I'm really struggling to just set up a development environment consistently, I'd recommend people start with Vagrant. And that's a great starting point. If it's, you know, I'd like to play with clouds and I want to spin up my first Azure VM and play with that, great, Terraform is the right place to start there. And that's how I'd maybe think about it.
Okay, so I'm in the Azure team and my focus is really on Linux.
Mm-hmm.
But your tools, a lot of them support both Linux and Windows. You want to talk about
Yeah, actually a much broader support than even just those two. Like I said, it's like for us, it's like we want to meet our users wherever they are. So almost all of the tools run on Linux, run on Mac, run on Windows, run on BSD. Some of them even run on like Raspberry Pis. So if you have your home cluster set up
okay. And
you really want to network all your Raspberry Pis together, that's possible.
Okay, maybe that's where your test run is running.
Yeah, there you go, exactly, our CI environment.
Okay, so what's next?
So I think there's a bunch of stuff coming up that's interesting. One is, you know, as you know, but maybe the audience doesn't, we're working pretty closely with Microsoft to extend the support for ARM throughout Packer, throughout Terraform, to make sure that we support the widest range of of resources that exist in Azure and making that easily consumable by folks. Then in terms of learning more and sort of engaging, there's webinars that are coming up in terms of how do you actually use our products alongside Azure. There is meetup groups spanning all over. There's some Seattle area ones, San Francisco, all over the country. So I encourage people to look at HashiCorp user groups as well as Azure meetup groups. And then, you know, I would encourage folks to just check out, you know, HashiCorp.com and follow the blog. And as new integrations and new features become available, that's probably the best way for people to find out.
Okay, great. Well, thanks so much for coming.
Awesome, John. Thanks so much for having me.
All right.